you all are studying diligently, and you have hopes for prosperity and well-being in the future. Now, if we look at scientific research, we find out that, surprisingly, prosperity and well-being don't automatically lead to satisfaction. The latest social research shows this. For example, in Japan, all of you engineers and future engineers would agree that Japan is a very advanced technological society. And the Japanese are very nimble at all forms of engineering. Their gross national product has quintupled. It's gone up by 5 in the past 50 years. But there has been no measurable increase in the people's happiness in terms of how that happiness is measured by social researchers. In fact, they have found the overall happiness has gone down slightly. But when you think the gross natural product has quintupled, it's more than 5 times what it was 50 years ago. But the happiness has not gone up at all. In fact, it's dipped slightly. An intelligent person should wonder about this. If we are being driven so intensely for prosperity and affluence, yet that prosperity and affluence doesn't translate into satisfaction and happiness, maybe we're going in the wrong direction. Now, as engineers, you're supposed to be coming up with the processes so that the raw materials of material nature can better serve human purposes. I propose to you that you should think very deeply about what are the real raw materials of life. In other words, don't leave yourself outside the equation. Don't leave yourself outside the process. The ancient Vedic knowledge advises us very strongly that we have to master the internal processes of ourself. When we talk about ourself, we are speaking about desire. How powerful is the force of desire? Is desire animate or inanimate? Or, more specifically, does desire indicate the presence of a non-material entity? Or is it simply a function of matter? Now, we should be wary, we should be very careful to make sure we're not forcing our life into a rigid pattern of consciously or unconsciously thinking everything is matter, everything is inanimate matter, and you simply have to come up with the right material process for dealing with all this inanimate matter. Electrical energy, nuclear energy, chemical energy, mechanical energy. So many kinds of material arrangements you can tinker with. But what about the energy of the self? And is the self matter or is it something else? This is the ultimate engineering question. Intelligent persons should consider this point, because if we spend our whole life just trying to increase our material well-being, we may have completely missed the point. In other words, we have not learned how to nourish our non-material self. I would propose that the highest engineering knowledge is contained within Bhagavad Gita and spoken by Lord Krishna, who is the supreme desire manager. If we look at Bhagavad Gita in that way, we'll go far away from our preconceptions that Lord Krishna and Bhagavad Gita are some kind of religious folklore or religious tradition. No. Please look at the world as you are trained. Look at the world in terms of energy and resources and how that energy and resources undergo processes. But don't leave yourself out of the whole picture. This is the big problem with materialistic science. It tries to figure out everything except what is the self. In one sense, it's understandable that this most crucial subject matter is avoided because there are no material answers to what is the self, what is consciousness. But in bhakti yoga, Sanatana Dharma, Krishna consciousness, the engineering of consciousness is dealt with directly and exhaustively. Just like if you're dealing with different forms and energies of matter, you want to manipulate those energies, refine them. How do we deal with our own conscious desire? You see, no matter how much opulence and affluence we acquire, unless we can master the power of our own desires, we're going to be miserable. Let me give you some statistics from the USA. One professor who I studied under there, Robert Lane, he has recently come up with statistics showing that the more choice and affluence there has been in a wealthy society, actually there has been decreased well-being in terms of internal happiness and satisfaction. Think about that. This sounds quite astonishing. It would seem natural, the more wealth, affluence, and prosperity there is, the happier people are. But no, the social scientists are showing the reverse is happening. And this is something that intelligent person should pay attention. Excuse me. Should pay attention to, especially here in India, where there has been a massive increase in wealth and prosperity, and you'll see even more in the future. Do you expect that massive increase in wealth and prosperity is going to be accompanied by happiness and fulfillment? If you're truly scientific, you have to be very doubtful about that. That is my first point, if you are truly scientific. In other words, I am not simply speaking religious belief to you, religious morality. I am giving you scientific justification for the most ancient science of the soul, the most ancient science of Bhagavad Gita. The honest social research of today, done by prestigious researchers, shows there is a big problem. Happiness and fulfillment and satisfaction does not match up with increases in wealth and prosperity. So an intelligent person should think about that. So what did my former professor from Yale University uncover? He found that in the past 30 years in the USA, the gross national product has more than doubled. Japan, remember, it quintupled over 50 years. this professor's statistics are for the past 30 years. He found that in America, the gross national product has doubled, yet the numbers of people describing themselves as very happy decline by 5%. So on the one hand, so much productivity, so much output doubled. On the other hand, the numbers of persons who said they were very happy went down by 5%. In the USA, 5% means 14 million people. In India, 5%. What's worse, in the USA, clinical depression has soared beyond what anyone could ever predict. Therefore, it seems that as society becomes more wealthy, as people have more choices, they feel they can do whatever they want. They feel they have so many options, so many alternatives, but they're less happy. So please think about that. Be scientific in all aspects of your life. That is why we want to focus on desire, because someone who knows how to deal with desire can actually be the most productive and make their life successful. Without understanding how to harness desire, you'll be dragged around. I'm sure that you can see happening around you. Hopefully, you don't see it happening to you. How people say are led around by their desires more than ever before. In a society that's considered healthy, according to today's mundane or material standards, the more you can inflame the people's consumer desires, the more productive and successful that society is. But when we look at healthy societies according to the standards of the greatest personalities, the most advanced personalities, as described in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, we find a different vision for human well-being. Someone who can manage their desires. Someone who can coordinate their own desires actually can be satisfied and teach others satisfaction. So where do you go to get this kind of education? How to engineer your own desires rather than let your desires carry you here and there. Where do you go for this kind of knowledge? Therefore, we say, as practitioners of Krishna consciousness, that the highest knowledge is knowledge of desire. Then, once you know that highest knowledge, everything else can fall into place. Yes, we can learn how to manipulate the electrical energy, the chemical energy, the nuclear energy, and so on and so forth. But unless we know how to process desire, we'll have chaotic societies and chaotic lives. I find great potential in speaking this timeless message of India in India. In other parts of the world, however, you would be shocked that they're starting to feel quite embarrassed. Perhaps you all have a natural proclivity or tendency for hearing this subject matter, but you may not immediately think that this subject matter can be scientific or is scientifically corroborated. In other parts of the world, they don't have your natural propensity for hearing spiritual knowledge, but they have embarrassment and they have anxiety because they have gone down the material affluence and prosperity road so vigorously, and now they're suffering so much, they're wondering what's going on. Therefore, the topmost social researchers are coming out with all this embarrassing information. Now, because you all have a natural propensity for spiritual knowledge, take advantage of your advantage. Our hope is that some of you, at least, will think very deeply about this presentation and indeed think how to engineer your own life in a different way. First of all, in order to properly make use of the resources of our life, we have to understand what is important and what is not so important. The material needs must be met, of course, but are they the most important thing? And furthermore, if you fulfill all your material needs, will you be happy? Will you be satisfied? The social research says no. Let's look at some of the specifics of the pitfalls that are there for those who wholeheartedly embrace the ascent to material prosperity and affluence. One researcher, I've spoken about this at other educational institutes in Mumbai, one researcher has divided persons into two groups, the maximizers and the satisficers. So we'll see which group you might place yourself in. We can do our own research here. Maybe I'll take an informal survey. If I sense that you all might participate. But generally, most students, they don't want to reveal what their real portfolio is. All right. Are you a maximizer? A maximizer is a person who prides himself, herself, on always doing whatever is necessary to make the best choice. When you go to buy something, when you search for a job, you weigh up all the possibilities. You investigate each thoroughly until you feel, okay, now I can make a choice. And then the satisficers, that term, it sounds a little funny, but it comes from a Nobel Prize winner, economist, psychologist, Herbert Simon of Carnegie Mellon University. A satisficer is someone who says, well, I'll just make the best decision at the moment and leave it at that. I won't worry. So on the scale between the maximizer and the satisficer, there are obviously so many permutations. How would you evaluate yourself? If you're a maximizer, you are in constant stress and anxiety how to make the best possible choice. When you go to buy something, you take so much time. You investigate on the internet, product reviews. You love lists of things that rank. This is higher than that. You put so much energy into choosing. You take so long to decide what you want to do because you have to make the right choice. You feel that everything is riding upon this particular decision. You've got to get it right. If you're a satisficer, however, when you find something that seems okay, you accept that and you stop searching, you stop looking. You don't spend time comparing things that you purchased or decisions you made with what everyone else is doing. But if you're a maximizer, indeed, that's what you do. You spend so much time reading labels, checking consumer magazines, trying out new products. You compare decisions you've made, things you've purchased with what everyone else has done. You know it's not possible to investigate every option, but you still try. Now, it gets worse. even after you, as a maximizer, finally make your selection, later you're nagged by the doubt. Maybe there were some alternatives I didn't have time to investigate. All right, I'll take a risk and ask. Informal survey. How many of you go more to the maximizer side? Raise your hands, please. Okay, a few honest persons. How many of you go more to the satisficer side? Raise your hands. Okay. And most of you did not want to reveal your position, as I expected. That's all right. Please listen anyway. For those of you who are dedicated to the maximizing position, it's very difficult to make a decision. Okay, finally I have to act now. I have to decide what to do. I have to decide what to purchase. I have to decide which job I'm going to take. Maybe some of you, when you finish school and enter the job market, you're going to go through such agony making sure you are going to make the right choice. I'll have some statistics about that later, by the way. The satisfaction achieved by maximizers searching for jobs and satisficers searching for jobs. You'll find it very interesting, very enlightening. Now, once you invest so much energy in making a choice in a materialistic society, you set yourself up for so much regret later. And that regret is inevitable because, as the ancient Vedic teachings have said for so many thousands of years, you can't be satisfied by material gain. So therefore, there must be regret. So the more you invest, the more you're going to feel regret later. Because the thing didn't satisfy you, and then you're going to kick yourself. I put so much effort in, so much energy, and I'm not happy. What's happening in affluent societies that have long been down this road, they're finding not only does this regret loom big down the road, but also clinical depression. The regret becomes so great that it actually becomes like a psychosis, like you actually become mentally unstable. Living in today's information age, you're bombarded at every moment with so many alternatives. Therefore, if you don't make the right choice, you kick yourself so severely, you feel so incompetent, you feel substandard. So there are great psychological risks in society as it is designed now. If we want to go deep into the situation, we'll recognize that people are not trained to deal with their desire energy because they don't know what consciousness is, they don't know what the self is. Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that consciousness is the symptom of the spirit soul. That is why no material scientific instrument has ever detected directly the presence of consciousness. Lord Krishna explains that you should know that which pervades the whole body is consciousness. Consciousness is the energy of the soul. So how are you going to manage that consciousness? How are you going to manage that conscious desire? Now, actually, the ancient Vedic knowledge explains that it is desire, the force of desire, that causes you to change one body after another. You may wonder, what is it that could power the whole system of reincarnation, changing bodies? If it is so, what drives the whole system onward? It is desire that powers the whole system. Therefore, the Krishna conscious person seeks to properly manage desire, engineer desire, so that you get the best possible outcomes now and in the future. All right, now you may say, well, why do we have to worry about spiritual knowledge? Let's just focus on the material situation. But that's very risky, as I've already pointed out. And actually, the worst damage is that you are neglecting the real you. You're neglecting your spirit soul. This is Krishna's warning in Bhagavad Gita. You waste your life neglecting the real you. And where is the education that will allow you to come in touch with the spirit soul, your spiritual identity, and connect it to the supreme spiritual identity? Where do we go for that kind of education? Let's talk about the job hunt, because so many of you, eventually, if you don't go further with graduate studies, postgraduate studies, you'll be heading for the job market. Now, of course, this research is from the USA, but we see more and more that here in India, same patterns are starting to arise for the successful persons. Let me tell you of the work done at Columbia University by two famous psychologists. They found that if you're a maximizer looking for a job after graduation, you find positions with 20% higher incomes than the satisficing job seekers. So that, many of you would probably say, well, that makes sense. If you're a maximizer, you're squeezing the most out of every situation to make the right decision. You're sifting through all the possibilities. You're investigating, researching, going over everything with a fine-tooth comb. Naturally, you're going to come up with a job that pays more than someone who just says, oh, I went to a job interview. The person was nice. The company seems nice. Okay, I'll take it. Those are the satisficers. So the maximizers get 20% higher income for their starting salary. But what do psychologists say? They are less satisfied with their job and less satisfied by the process they underwent to get the job. They're exhausted from the whole process. And then the job they get in of itself doesn't satisfy them as much as the satisficers who just took the easy route. Okay, it was a nice interview, nice company, good benefits. Okay, I'll take it. We'll see what happens in a few years. No big deal. So although the maximizers get more money, 20% more, they are less satisfied. And they also feel very drained and worn out by the whole process they went through to be the best, to get the best. So this is the kind of engineering knowledge that we need. This is social science at its best. It's giving you the tools that actually would push the intelligent person in the spiritual direction. Often, students may think that if I take this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita that Lord Krishna teaches, if I take it seriously, my competitive edge could be reduced. In Australia, I speak a lot to overseas students from India. They look around at life there. They look around at the social situation, and they see, although on the one hand it looks nice and comfortable, they see how miserable people are. So they're beginning to wonder, is this where we're heading? But at the same time, they have a fear, these overseas Indian students, that if we start investigating spiritual science too deeply, we'll lose our competitive edge at the job place, at the workplace. What I'm presenting to you today should get you to think otherwise, that the competitive spirit at the workplace, unless it's tempered and toned by spiritual values and spiritual knowledge, will get you in a lot of mental trouble. So much so that you head towards clinical depression. That's what the latest social research is showing. Those who are the maximizers are less satisfied with life. They're more prone to depression. And in fact, their psychological testing puts them in the borderline clinical depression range. Now, let's look more deeply at factors that will affect you in your efforts to ascend on the prosperity ladder. Whatever choice you make in material life, you'll always be disturbed that there could have been another road I should have taken. So therefore, the fact that there are other alternatives that you could have taken diminish your satisfaction from having taken a particular road. This is a big problem. Well, I accepted this job offer, or I went to this school, but what if I had taken the other job? What if I'd gone to the other school? These are known as opportunity costs. You take one opportunity, but that means you didn't take the other opportunities. And so, therefore, you can't be completely happy because you know there are other alternatives. There were other possibilities. Maybe those would have been better. So, the so-called opportunity costs decrease your chance to be materially happy. This is one thing I like you to pay attention to. Material life is so constructed that there's always something reducing your dream of material happiness. There are opportunity costs. You don't have a free chance. That's the way the whole process is designed in material nature. You can't have free access to material happiness. There are so many hidden costs, hidden pitfalls in the whole process of moving from desire to enjoy matter to material happiness. Very, very dangerous road. So what we are proposing tonight is that we take as our highest aspiration spiritual science, and then we can actually learn how to handle our own desires. We can see that in materially affluent societies, people are suffering because they can't manage themselves. Even though their gross national product is soaring, personal wealth is soaring, they can't manage themselves. They don't know who they are. So they mechanically, ritualistically, go through so many ordeals, study, job, investments, purchases, mortgages, property developments. They go through all that, but they neglect the power of their own desire. They don't know how to deal with it. And they allow a materialistic society to force low desires out of you. The problem of participating in a consumerist society is that a consumerist society simply caters to the lowest desire. Work, buy, consume, and die. Now, there has to be something higher in life than that. Once you understand your non-material identity, then you'll start to become interested in non-material desire. This is actually the highest technology, the technology of the spirit soul and pure spiritual desire. The most intelligent persons are concerned with this highest science. They understand, I am not simply the sum total of chemicals in my body. I am not simply a material reality. There is another dimension of my existence that I have to find out about. And because there is another dimension of my existence, there is another dimension of desire that I haven't tapped into. You see, the truth is that spiritual desire is far more powerful than material desire. Some of you may be wondering, I have considered a Krishna conscious lifestyle, or I've heard about it. I've seen persons who look brilliant and dynamic and glowing who are practicing this lifestyle. But could it be possible for me, especially amidst my current workload, my current study load? Is it possible? How is it possible? Because the power of spiritual desire far surpasses the power of material desire. Now, everyone knows what it's like to have material desires. That means desires to enjoy matter. Matter in the shape of, all types of energy, all types of substances, metal, plastic, silicon chips, flesh, alcohol. This is all matter. And material desire means you think that you will be happy by connecting with matter in these shapes and forms and substances. Spiritual desire means you understand the truth that Lord Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita. Unless I, as a non-material entity, connect with non-material happiness, my life will not be successful. That potential, the spiritual potential for spiritual desire, is far more powerful than your material potential. I know some of you here, you may be brilliant students, and you feel that ahead of you is a powerful career. But even more powerful than your academic brilliance and job potential is the power of your spiritual desire. It is possible through spiritual desire, Krishna conscious desire, that while taking care of your material needs, while doing the necessary for your material situation, you can focus on the supreme goal, the topmost goal. This is the technology that Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Connecting the non-material limited soul to the non-material unlimited soul. That is what Krishna consciousness is about. What are the processes going on between the two, the limited and the unlimited? What is the nature of the connection? This is the highest knowledge a human being can encounter. Now, you're facing not only opportunity costs in the decisions you make, you're also facing something that's called adaptation. As soon as you make a choice, even before the regret comes, because you think sooner or later, oh, I should have done something else. First is adaptation. You become accustomed to what you got. It loses its thrill. You become tired of it. You wanted it so badly, but once you get it, it turns out to be no big thing. So, please add all these things as costs in your analysis. Opportunity costs, choice costs. There is regret. There is adaptation. You become just accustomed to what you got. It loses its charm. We already spoke of the regret, of course. And then there is the constant psychological problem that you underestimate the distress that your choice will bring, and you overestimate the happiness that your choice will bring. This is human nature, and psychologists have documented it. Human beings constantly underestimate the potential distress in their life, and they overestimate the potential happiness of their life. Looked at another way, what constantly goes on is in reality, the happiness decreases and the distress escalates, increases. Even though The human nature is expecting the reverse. Very few people are prepared to take a straight look at the situation. But I feel that as engineers, you want to deal with reality. The Krishna conscious person is fully conversant with reality. And therefore, the Krishna conscious person can actually benefit himself, herself, and others. But if we use our intelligence just to hide from reality, what can be the future? And this is what's gone on in the other affluent countries of the world who have a long-standing record of this. You see frustration leading to depression. We don't want to go down that same road. That is why we are appealing to the most intelligent persons. Those of you who are gathered here, you must be qualified to think deeply. So we're appealing to you. What can you do in your life that will actually make a profound difference? Will simply manipulating matter make a profound difference for your happiness and the happiness of all society? No. We have to learn how to manage desire. Learning to manage desire means learning what is the spirit soul, what is the supreme soul. Learning to deal with spiritual resources, spiritual energies. Now you may say, well, that sounds very nice, but what scientific proof is there for spiritual energies and spiritual resources? There's no scientific proof for it, therefore we don't have any such courses at our institution for dealing with it or managing it. There's no scientific proof for it. But I ask you, what is the scientific proof that your consciousness exists? None. The only reason that you know you're conscious is because of first-person knowledge, first-hand knowledge. I feel like I'm conscious. Therefore, you're a human being. You look alive. You must be conscious too. That's the only scientific evidence that you're conscious. As we said, there is not one scientific instrument that can directly detect the presence of consciousness. So there is no scientific proof for that which allows you to be aware of everything, to perceive everything. Yet here we are, busy becoming aware and perceiving, knowing, by the virtue, by the medium of something we have no idea what it is. Well, that is unscientific. Our point tonight, in conclusion, is that we need a higher kind of science and a different type of laboratory. No, not that we should stop the scientific research as is happening now. No, go right ahead. But understand there is something higher. So at least there should be equal time spent with the material knowledge and the spiritual knowledge. That will produce a wholesome human being. I wish that you all think deeply about this information and seek out the ways and means how to apply it in life. You see, as Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, what is daytime for the materialist is nighttime for the spiritualist, and vice versa. They undergo two different engineering processes. One is concerned with the highest, the eternal, what is conscious. The other is concerned with the temporary and what is matter. Both are necessary, but we always must understand which has the upper hand. That's all. Then we have a true balanced human civilization. So that is the timeless message of Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. How to have a truly balanced human society where all the types of knowledge are cultivated with recognition of what is the most important knowledge. So I'll stop here and ask if you have any questions, perhaps.
Sir, you said about sacrifice, right?
In one way, you can say that they are a person without any ambition because they go on and just take whatever comes their way. They don't have a particular goal in their life. They just go and get whatever comes their way. So is it one way we can say sacrifice is a person without any ambition?
According to psychological studies, the satisficer, as I said, this is a term devised by Nobel Prize-winning psychologist and economist, a satisficer has ambition, but within limits. Like, in other words, let me give you the Krishna conscious perspective, because that would be the most helpful. We are satisficers in Krishna consciousness in that we know matter cannot make us happy. Therefore, our whole life does not depend on material choices. Material resources are limited. You make the best choice you can while putting most of your emphasis on spiritual development. So it's not that you're just sitting around being lazy. Well, whatever comes my way, that's what I'll do. And no, it's not like that. You're simply, as a Krishna-conscious satisficer, you're understanding, I am not matter. Matter cannot make me happy. Therefore, let me make the best solution about material things without getting my whole consciousness absorbed in it. I'm not going to stake my whole life on it. And let me get on with my more important affairs, my more important engineering. That's all. So I'm suggesting that we have to balance the temporary with the eternal, the material with the spiritual. Of the two, the spiritual is far more important. That we have to recognize while taking care of our material responsibilities. Okay? That's all right?
So, what's the difference between expectation and desire?
Very little. You have desires and you expect that they're going to be fulfilled. Now, psychologists have shown that human beings constantly overestimate with their expectations. They think, if I do such and such, it's going to lead to a happy future. They constantly overproject, overexpect. That's human tendency. This is known as illusion. Now, if you can train your desires, harness your desires, you won't get into this kind of trouble. And how do you most expertly deal with your desires? You learn how to desire spiritually. That's actually the most confidential knowledge taught by Lord Krishna. How, with spiritual consciousness, you seek the supreme spiritual goal. Then your expectations are more than rewarded. But bear in mind what typically happens with material expectations. You overproject, you overpredict, and you set yourself up for regret and disappointment. This is what's going on now in the other economic powerhouses who've long been down this road. Anything else? That's a very nice question. Thank you. Yes?
I want to ask one practical problem. Every satisfier is passive. If the satisfier marries with the wife who wants him to become a maximum,
and in that process, everybody becomes unhappy. These boys are also clapping. Means they have realized the future problem, actually. So in that case, the person himself as a person is happy. Now in the team, you know it, after children and all. Sir, are you married? That is also one, if you are facing the similar thing, you can guide us in all this thing. Because most of the people are facing the same problem.
To tell you the truth, I decided to take the easy way out. But at the same time, I recognize that for most human beings, they require certain complications. I am not naive to that reality. I didn't have to go to Yale to learn that. So you have brought up very eloquently a powerful reality that you might be a satisficer is the accurate term, and you marry a maximizer, right? So what to do? Everyone's in that. Because what's that? I can't hear. He can dare to. Oh, he's asking on behalf of everyone else who's right too shy. Okay. This is a common problem. The best thing I can recommend is that you become expert in Krishna conscious knowledge, Krishna conscious engineering, so that number one, either you can avoid such a disharmonious situation, or number two, you can learn how to make the best out of it. But you're going to have spiritual knowledge, in any case, to cope with any situation. Otherwise, life is very bewildering and overpowering. You're right. Now, what you didn't talk about was what happens when you may be a satisficer and you marry a maximizer, and then you have kids who want to be maximizers. You see, things go on and on and on. Let me read you some scientific research. According to a survey done in the USA in 1999, what has been called the curse of high expectations has been uncovered. If you look at the affluent households in the USA, 50% of the children born in such affluent households say their lives are harder than their parents' lives. How could that be? Typically, parents want that their children get better, arrangements in life are happier. But in the USA, it's been found that 50% of the children in affluent households say our lives are not as happy as our parents' lives. We have it harder than they do. We have it worse. Why do they say like that? They say that the children say, we are held up to such high expectations. Not only our parents' expectations of us, but our own expectations of us. They say it's too much. They have so many activities they're supposed to be doing, so many consumer choices, so many things to learn. They feel so much pressure, and they can't slide back. To do less than what their parents did is known as a great disaster. So the children feel all this pressure. You have to at least do as much as your parents did, if not more. So therefore the children are saying, we're miserable. So where does all this stop? It's not simply a problem with mother and father. It's a problem with children also. So most of you will be heading in towards child production. What are you going to do about this problem? Mother and father have no answers. How are the children going to have answers? What is the future of society? Answer, please, that engineering question. Very crucial for the well-being of society. Therefore, I am proposing a different paradigm. Actually, a timeless paradigm, as given by Lord Krishna. Let us learn how to deal with non-material substance, the soul, spiritual desire. What is a spiritual lifestyle? You see, the crucial issue is actually lifestyle management. How do I live as a spiritual entity, or how do I live as a materialist? There is so much information and stimuli available now for how you live as a materialist. But where do you find out about spiritual lifestyles? Where do you find out about managing the spiritual desire? So, my humble service to you all is to present the opportunities for managing spiritual desire, dealing with spiritual consciousness, shaping spiritual lifestyles. That actually is the greatest wealth. I remember, I often tell this story. My spiritual teacher, Srila Prabhupada, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he brought this genuine knowledge of Bhagavad Gita outside of India to the USA in mid-60s. Bhagavad Gita as it is, the accurate knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. And he was speaking at MIT, giving a talk in an auditorium, just as I'm attempting to do now. And after he gave his talk, presenting the subject matter of spiritual science, there were questions by the Americans. And then some Indian overseas students stood up to ask questions. And they challenged, "Swamiji, why have you come to the USA teaching this ancient Indian knowledge? We all know that India requires technological development. It doesn't need this spiritual knowledge anymore. It's had enough of it. What? Here we are, we've come to MIT." In other words, they're saying, "We come to MIT to learn technology, and now we find a Swami in our midst teaching us this village stuff. What's going on?" So, Srila Prabhupada's answer was, because he was elderly, he was in his 70s, he could, and these were young men in their early 20s, he took advantage of the traditional respect that Indian youth should have for elders. So he said to them quite directly, in answer to their question, because they were kind of challenging, you know, "What is the use of this spiritual knowledge? We need technology. We need material research. Especially India needs that." So Srila Prabhupada answered about to these students in terms of their presence at MIT, these overseas students. He said, "You have come here to beg. I have come here to give." He turned the tables on her. "You've come to beg technology. I have come to give the highest spiritual knowledge." So what I'm saying today is that let us have a balance. Go on with your material studies, fine, but just recognize it is not the most important thing, and it will not make you happy. You have to turn to the spiritual knowledge. You have to turn to understanding what is the soul, what is spiritual desire, what is the supreme soul. I remember, finally I'll say, my days at Yale University, my professors allowed me to study whatever I wanted to. Because I told them, "I'm looking for what is the real secrets? What are the real secrets of life?" So they let me study. I can make up my own curriculum. You know, anything. Psychology, history, philosophy, on, history of science and technology. And several of my professors told me, "We really appreciate what you're doing. We hope that you find the answer because we don't know what it is. If you find something, let us know. So, you may wonder how it is that I began my career of spiritual technology, Krishna consciousness. Right after I graduated, I like to tell people that, for example, if you want to enroll in Yale University now, for 4 years, the total cost will be over $100,000. So when I finished those 4 years, I spent $5 to get a genuine Bhagavad Gita. And that is what turned my whole life around. Now you may say, well, we think that you're using some of the skills you learned at Yale to talk to us. So it wasn't all a loss. I agree. I'm using whatever limited skills I was taught in the service of the unlimited. That is intelligence. You can also do much better. And that is my humble plea to you all. Do much better. Take this timeless spiritual knowledge. Recognize desire is the hidden reality of your life. Learn how to manage it and shape your lifestyle for spiritual productive purposes, and then you'll truly be successful and prosperous. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
So I would like to thank His Holiness Devamrit Swami for his excellent presentation on lifestyle of desire management. So I would also like to thank all the students and especially my dear friends and colleagues and faculty who have spent their so much valuable time to come over here after the college hours and spending their time out here.